Good evening.
Good evening.
You're the only one yet so far.
Okay. Marco.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We are starting with Parsha Noah from the Zohar. We are doing this from section 16, and we're starting with Pasuk 131. And I'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kud Shabrechu Ishkin Tehid Merechi Melud Hilu Ud Hilu Echimu Le'afga L'shem Yud He B'vav He V'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah V'ahino Amadonai Elohinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadena Kunene Aleinu Ma'asei Yadena Kunenehu Varnashtihu Zaka'ihu Karbana Mamash the Kapara Viahara Dilav Ihu Zaka'a Lavihu Karbana Begin Devea Muma Dictiv Kilo Lirakason The Gomer, the Alda, Tzadikaya, Kafara, Inun, the Alma, the Karbana, Inun, the Alma, Tachatse, Vayomar, Elohim, Benoach, Ketz, Kol Basar, Balifanai, Lemetal, Rishu Leach Shaka Apaihu Divne Alma Ugine Kachinani Mashitam Et Haaretz. A person who is righteous is himself a sacrifice given for atonement, because he sacrifices his own desire, overcoming his will. But a person who is not righteous is not accepted as a sacrifice, because he is blemished, as it is written, "For it shall not be acceptable for you." So the righteous atone alone atone for the world, and are accepted as sacrifices. In this world, come and see. And Elohim said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, namely the other side, and it came to receive permission to darken the faces of humankind. So that is why I will destroy them with the earth. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Well, it appears to me that the first part, when Rabbi Eichleib puts in caps, because he sacrifices his own desire, overcoming his will, that sounds like binding by striking. And if that's the case, then when, as we have occasions to carry through with binding by striking, we grow in righteousness. So that's what I think.
That's very nice. Remember, there's 70 understandings. So that is one of them. That makes perfect sense.
Okay, and
but
then
take a look at the,
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, as it goes along, then it's letting us know that at that time, evidently the negative system is coming to Hashem and I guess accusing mankind. For how badly they've gotten to be, which would be why he would say they came to ask permission to darken the faces of humankind. And other, so Hashem has to say yes.
Well, Hashem doesn't have to say yes.
Well, he says, I will destroy them with the earth.
Did he destroy them with the earth, or did he destroy them with water?
Well, he destroyed them with water. Are you thinking about the different, the fire, the water, the air, and the earth? Okay, so it wouldn't be that meaning with earth. Okay. I took it to mean the flood.
Let me give you a different way of understanding this. Did Noah have some chaos in his life when he came out of the ark?
Yes.
He got drunk and his sons did something to him. There's differences of different midrash as to whether he was castrated or whether he was sexually abused. It's not clear, but there was clearly some chaotic events in his life at that moment. That's what the Torah says. But the Torah tells us that Noah is a righteous man. So how come righteous people have chaos?
There are several reasons why a person has chaos in their life. Could be something from a previous lifetime. It could
not
be
a righteous person.
Well,
a righteous person is righteous
today and not righteous tomorrow by their act. You know.
Yes, that's true. So was Noah righteous when the Torah says he was righteous? The answer is yes. Did he do anything according to the Torah's description? Did he do anything that wasn't righteous? After that, he followed God's directives. He built the ark. He followed God's directions. He worked for the year taking care of the animals. Was Noah still righteous, or had he fallen? This verse in the Zohar is telling us a person who is righteous is a sacrifice given for atonement. Not explaining it, and you're right that it is binding by striking that Rabbi Ashlag is saying, but just read the words from the Zohar itself. A person who is righteous is a sacrifice given for atonement, but a person who is not righteous is not accepted as a sacrifice. Now, that's a very different worldview than we see the way the world works. Or maybe it isn't. Maybe it's correct. We see all of these people when we look at them, we see that they abuse other people. They don't follow properly. They don't do good things. We see all this, and that they're not accepted as a sacrifice. But the person who is doing all the good work, he comes down with illness. He comes down with cancer. He comes down with the chaos in his life. God forbid. This verse is expressing a view that is very difficult for people to accept. Why should I be a righteous person? Why should I do what's good? Why should I control my emotions if I'm going to be a sacrifice? Because the righteous person knows that to become close to God, he has to accept what happens to him. And because he needs to accept what happens to him, Hashem says, if this person receives the chaos that belongs to other people, now that's not what God says, but it appears like that to us. The righteous person receives chaos, and that means that other people do not have to receive their chaos. And we've read verses like that in Bereshit. And this verse here in Noah is essentially saying a similar thing. And God said to, Elohim said to Noah, the other side, the end of all flesh, is come before me and has asked for judgment. He's asked for strict judgment. And God said, yes, you can go darken the faces of humankind, so I will destroy them. Now he says, with the earth. Now, we could understand that two ways. One, it could be the way, as I've said before, sometimes the Kabbalists will confuse people by saying, switching words. And so when they confuse people, someone who's knowledgeable, who has wisdom, will see that, no, he didn't destroy them with the earth, he destroyed them with water.
Which is worse.
It could be that after Noah, after the flood, and this whole verse could be talking about after the coming out of the ark, it could be that all of the chaos in this world comes from the earth, substances of the earth. The plants don't grow, so people go hungry. The rains don't come on time, so people go hungry. People developed weapons of mass destruction. And to some extent, they were used. And so wars are based on using tools that come from the earth. Steel, iron, brass, all come from the earth. So we could understand it that way as well. So I've confused you, but I want to say you were right. It was talking about binding by its liking. It is talking about a righteous person who becomes the sacrifice. He becomes the sacrifice of other people. So they don't have to experience the full chaos that they should experience, but they can't, because they don't have the vessel to handle that chaos. Remember the adage, God never gives a person more than they can handle. Now, I believe I was talking, and I heard somebody else talking in the background, but I didn't hear what you said, so please Say it again.
No, it was me. I just said you didn't confuse me. I just think you see it one way and I see it another, and they're both correct.
That is correct.
I see it as Noah having lost his joy. That possibly was, you know, and by losing his joy, that also gave the negative system.
Yes, you know. That's true. It never says that Noah lost his joy. That's why he grew the vines and created the wine. So he could be joyful. Now, you could imply that he needed the wine to become joyful. I'm not arguing that. That very much is a possibility. So you can see all of this ties together in many different ways of understanding it.
Well, I listened to the recording from yesterday, and I felt like that joy was a big concept in those verses that studied yesterday that I missed, and it made me think of when it talked about the new moon, and you know, when after the full moon, it begins to wane and gets darker, and it's like periods in our life where we had good times and we have bad times, and it's being able to hold your joy through that time. Then I got to thinking about how in Tammuz, when cancer starts to form, and what's the remedy? The remedy is joy. And that sounds easy, but it's very hard to do. And I don't know, that was, I guess it was different because I listened to it at 3:30 this morning and I didn't have the Zohar open. And so I just listened. There wasn't anything to read, you know, or follow along with you. And so it just brought those different things. And then I thought about Aaron when his sons died, and Nadav and Abihu, and Hashem told him not to grieve. You know, so that's why I caught this big concept of holding on to joy through the bad times, through the chaos in our life, and it made me think there that possibly that was what happened to Noah. You know, to know that, or to think that you're the only ones on the earth, and having spent those days in the water and sweating all over, you know, that would be pretty hard to go through and not lose your joy. And like what you said about growing the vines and drinking the wine, and you know. So anyway, I thought joy was mixed in there, even though it's not.
It is what we discussed yesterday. Joy was very much part of it, and it does apply to this one. It's another one of the 70 ways of understanding the verse.
Binding by strength isn't always easy, you know, especially if your chaos has come one after the other. You know, your husband dies and then someone else has cancer, and, you know, life has a way sometimes of coming hard at different people at different times, and it's hard to hold those, you know, the joy.
Malka, you wanted to say something?
My thoughts are, and those are all great thoughts, my thought is that he was so protected in the ark, and it shows that when he comes out of the ark, how vulnerable we are to the other side, and how quickly the negative side attaches to the flesh, one's flesh. And, Noah may have just caved into his desires to drink the wine, knowing that too much wine was not pleasing to God. But to me, it just shows how quickly we can fall into the negative side, negative system, because the ark was his protection for over a year. or right out of here. And when he stepped out, God was still there. Hashem was still there. But so was the negative side, you know.
Right.
So that's kind of my thought pattern.
I saw that during the month of Tammuz last year. I was determined I was not going to lose my joy for the whole month. And I can't tell you how many happenings happened that, you know, showed me how hard it was just to do it for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So you can relate to what, I mean, I can really relate to what Malka just said. You know, here he is with his family and a whole year of water everywhere you look, and yeah, starting all over. I mean, you don't even have a house. You don't have shelter. I mean, you've got to start from scratch. Of course, I guess they were in and out of the ark for a while. Anyway, I think I've said enough.
No, it's very much there. There are two verses left, and we only have 8 minutes for the half hour. I imagine we will exceed that, and then we'll only have one verse to do to keep the section. So what's your thoughts on stopping here and then doing those two verses on Monday? Or should we continue and try and do both of them?
I've got two casseroles in the oven, so Tony came and showed me, and they're not ready yet. It's up to y'all. It looks like a short verse.
I would prefer to go on.
Okay.
To continue.
Okay.
Go on.
So verse 132. It's nice to hear from you, Brandy.
Thank you.
Tachate machitiv. Benoach ben shesh meot shana Wigomer viki amai Atah hushpana Dalim yamim ne Ela ilu lahawa Noach ben shesh meot shana La yeol letevuta Bela yitcha bar Bachada kevan Tishtalim b'shesh meot Shana kedein yitcha bar Bechada. Come and see, it is written, and Noah was 600 years old. And he asks, why does the verse count the years of Noah? And he answers, if Noah was not 600 years old, he would not have entered the ark and united with it, because he became complete with 600 years. He became complete with 600 years, and therefore he could unite with it. I'm changing one of the words, but it's essentially what the meaning is. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, six is man's number, and so we've got 6 × 10 × 10 to make 600.
Which 10 × 10 is completion, correct?
Right.
Right.
I also thought it might
relates to the sixth step. Hesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. So that's what we're being taught here. If we extrapolate, every number in the Torah is giving you a meaning. It isn't meaning. Doesn't mean that the person was physically what that number says. It says Abraham was 75 years old when he left Haran. But the Zohar explains that 75 really means 7 plus 5 and connects to the tetragrammaton on the right, the left, and the central. So whenever you see a number, you have to extrapolate and understand that number from a totally different perspective than the literal.
Could it also be 10 times, not 10 times, but 10 sephirot times 10 generations, since he was the 10th generation, to
yes.
make 600? And this,
yes.
Would this be considered a measurement of his righteousness? In other words, he was...
Word you said?
It's actually a measurement of his righteousness. Is that how we could word it, the 600?
I've never heard that said, but it's very possible. I don't think righteousness is something we measure. Yes, there are hierarchies in righteousness. Moses was the more righteous of all the prophets.
Well, I was thinking how the Torah says that he was righteous in his generation. So it's like they're measuring his righteousness against the rest of the other people of that generation.
It's very possible and very nice. It's thinking outside the box. Great. As I said, I've never heard it. Doesn't mean it's not correct.
Does that number also have to do with the temple itself and building the temple? I mean, he was in the ark, and I don't know. I just kind of thought came to me.
The Mizbeach and the temple are all related to the ark. That is correct. So it very much can relate to the ark.
I don't know how or what the sequence of numbers are to relate to that, but I'm just thinking
think
that it's all connected.
When we studied the third temple, I think it's in chapter 6, but I might be wrong with that. I just folded that yesterday and put it in a plastic folder, and chapter 6 just, back when we studied it, meant so much to me that I made a card on it and I saw the measurements. I hope I'm telling you correctly, but I know it's in that class. So you could look on the Yeshem website.
Well, I always see all these things connected. They're like prototypes to what will come or what the next generation will consist of or what will be in that generation. So I just kind of, it's all connected. It's kind of like a box, you know, and it's all intertwined together. And to me, it's more like prophecy as to what's going to happen, you know, with the other righteous individual that comes after Noah.
That is correct. Verse 133. Shana v'ishtalim hargeya ki kayaot v'hava tzadik sholim shelim Ukdain al tevuta, the kola kegazna, dileilan the noach, ben sheish meot shana, kimadi amaran ugine, kachla itmar kiven sheish meot shana. From the day that the sins of the people were completed, from the time they were deserving of receiving their punishment, the Holy One, blessed be He, still waited for them. He waited until Noah completed his 600 years, and he perfected himself as a righteous man. Only then did Noah enter the ark, and everything below is as above. In other words, everything was done by divine inspiration from the upper Yesod and Malchut. That is why it is written that Noah was 600 years old, and not approximately 600. For as we have said, he had to be exactly 600 years old. Questions, comments, thoughts?
I think he just turned 600 years old when he actually entered the ark that day. I mean, I'm not sure, but I think that when he entered the ark, he was, you know, had just became of age.
Well, he wasn't the only one Hashem was waiting on, because they were also trying to shiva for Methuselah, as well as extending mercy to the rest of the world. So a lot was going on until he hit that 600-year mark.
Well, and the reason I say my statement is because they had to wait until the righteous person and Noah's, and prior to Noah's generation, they had to wait for that righteous person to pass on so that Noah could become, I guess, like you say, free choice to take on the
Noah could become the high priest.
Right. Because you can't have two high priests.
Correct. You could only have one. And the world always has a high priest. And if you go through the generations, you see that Methuselah was the high priest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Noah became the high priest, and he passed it on to his son Shem and so forth. So that's very, very, very creative, very good. They're very nice. It's a good study tonight.
It is a good study. Thank you, guys. It's really a good study. I'm glad we continued. Thank you, Hannah, for all your insight as well.
You're welcome.
You all have a beautiful evening. Our class tonight will be a Zohar class on Vayei Shlach. And Saturday night, we will have a Havdalah at 6 p.m. and a Zohar class at 7 p.m. for Vayeshev. Shalom to all.
Say that again. I'm sorry. Tonight we have a class at 7?
We have a, it's all of my times when I say the times, they're West Coast times. So
right.
For you it'll be 9 o'clock. But the Zohar class will be on Vayeshev. Zohar and Vayishlach, because that's what we read the Shabbat.
And that's it.
And then Saturday night, we go to Vayishev.
Okay.
It's 9 our time.
9 Yes, ma'am.
Time.
I thought we had. Yeah, I thought he said 2 classes tonight other than what we just had. But okay, I get it. I was confused. It's all me. Sorry.
No problem. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Shalom to all.
Shalom.